185miles south.com.
Smash that Patreon button.
Miles South, a hardcore punk rock podcast. What's up, everyone? We got Mikey and Will from Never Ending Game. What's up, dudes?
What up?
How's it going?
What up? What up? All right. So the new LP, Outcry, came out on Triple B Records May 12th, 2023. Mikey, what has the response been so far?
Fucking shit, man. I think it's been pretty good. I mean, been getting a bunch of texts and stuff from like friends from bands and shit that are, you know, they're all rocking with it. Everything I've seen online has been like pretty good. I think we're all real happy with it, and it's been super positive for us.
Will, the band is branching out like a bit more musically on this record. What are the influences that you're pulling in on this one that you didn't previously?
I think there's a lot more like Dynamo 95. That was kind of like the overall vibe of a lot of stuff. So if you watch any clip from that fest, it's like, I feel like this record is like a conglomeration of all of that stuff. Definitely way more metal influence, a lot of Pantera, Machine Head, but still kind of keeping the Cold as Life and hardcore roots was kind of the goal.
Yeah, Mikey, there's a great line on this record about getting a lobotomy on the song Take Me. Can you speak on where that came from?
Dude, so yeah, so that was Dennis, our bass player, basically like overheard this dude talking on the phone, and like this dude had just gotten out of jail, and he's like talking about like, he's like, yeah, you know, my head don't feel too good, you know, I think I need a lobotomy, a little off the top. So he told me about this fucking this interaction he had. I wasn't even there or nothing. And I was just like, dude, I think that's going to be a lyric. Like, I got to write that down.
I mean, the best part's like I think he was at like a grocery store, and the guy was on FaceTime, just like in the grocery store saying these insane things, which is just makes it even better when you know the backstory on it.
Yep, yeah. So that's where that came from. So I borrowed that from, some guy. I don't know who, but thank you for that one.
That's sick. You know, I pulled a line once off. I found like a website that it's a grim ass website. It's like the last words of like death row inmates.
That's awesome.
I pulled one off that. It's like, whether you're a king or a street sweeper, we all got to dance with the grim reaper.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You can take it, dude.
Yeah.
You can rent
yeah.
it for about 20 bucks.
That sounds like something off of like the Marauder record with Ratcatcher. Like, that sounds like totally right off of that.
Yeah, dude. So good. To both of you, we'll go to Will first on this, though, but Detroit has such a rich history in both punk and hardcore, you know, going all the way back to the Stooges, to Negative Approach, to Cold as Life. Where do you think the Never Ending Game fits in? And also, like, what do you want your legacy to be?
It's a good question. I mean, I think Detroit music is certainly one of the best with a very rich history, especially in hardcore. I mean, if you look at the Tied Down flyer and you see our name next to Negative Approach, it's kind of a trip. I mean, we've played them before, but even then, just seeing that our names right next to each other is incredible. So I'm just proud to be leaving some sort of legacy behind. You know, for myself, being from West Michigan, and Mikey and the rest of the guys coming from Detroit, this band was always kind of like the gap, it bridged the gap between West Michigan and East Michigan. And that was kind of like the whole thing. Like, there's a song on the demo called Unity, and that was the whole thing. It's like, our bands previously were always playing shows together. I'm like, man, we really got to get together and write some music and like bridge this gap between the two sides. And so for myself, I've always been proud of that, of like trying to bridge between the two different cities and bring our own unique sound. Cause I think we kind of do our own thing when it comes to where we fit in with the rest of Detroit music.
Yeah. Mikey, you want to feel that too? Like, what do you think, the Never Ending Game legacy, what do you want it to be? And where do you think you fit into it right now?
I mean, honestly, I try to just like look forward and like not look back and like think too much about it, cause it's fucking crazy what's going on right now, I think, with us. And just like, you know, it's like fucking, we're like friends with the Cold as Life guys. We're friends with like the Hate Inc guys and like a bunch of like dudes that we looked up to that seemed like were fucking, you know, out of reach and just like legends and stuff. And so it's cool. Like there, a lot of those guys are rocking with us and like coming out to shows and stuff. And so I don't know. I think that just kind of like speaks for itself that it's like a lot of the OGs are rocking with us. And you know, I hope we can, you know, just keep kind of spreading the unity like that and just keep building on what we got and just see where it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I think like bridging the gap between the two regions, but also bridging the gap between like the new and the old in so many words of like, you look at a show and I remember we played in Detroit last summer and on stage, it's just like all OG dudes. And then like, I see my girlfriend and her sister's boyfriend and my brother and like younger kids in the crowd dancing. And I'm like, damn, this is awesome. Like we're bringing everybody together and that's all that I've ever wanted.
Yep. Second that.
Mikey, you played bass in your previous band, Freedom. Do you think that, like, I think that some of the best frontmen in the history of hardcore have, like, played other instruments before they sang. Do you think there's any credence to that?
I mean, I feel like that happens a lot of times with drummers and stuff like that. Dude, adjusting to, like, being a frontman, like, I'm still fucking getting over it where, like, my ear still goes to the bass. Like, I'm still listening to fucking what the bass is doing. I'm still like, sometimes I'm like out of body where I'm like, wait, like, I'm like, I got to move around like this. I'm like, I'm just holding this mic and it's just me in front of the crowd. And like, I still like, it still trips me out. So I don't know. Like, I still feel like I'm figuring it out, but, I mean, I guess so, because playing bass, like there were so many times where like, I was like, oh, like, hey, like Dennis, you forgot to shout out so-and-so, or like, hey, make sure you say this like in between songs. And, so like just being in control, like now I'm like, oh, fuck, like I got to like make sure to shout out this guy and, you know, the dude who put us up or like stuff like that.
Dude, it's so much easier to say that when you play an instrument, the vocalist, than when you have the mic in your hand and you're like, oh, wait, I forgot to mention these five people or shout this thing out. So much harder to remember.
And then you feel like a piece of shit where you're like, man, like this guy brought us out to fucking, you know, whatever. And so, you know, yeah, there definitely comes some pressure and some like learning and stuff. But I mean, I definitely love fronting the band. And, you know, I'm very grateful that the guys, you know, gave me an opportunity and, you know, believe in what I say and all that.
I guess we'll keep you around, buddy.
Oh, thanks.
That's a sweetheart moment on 185. Appreciate that. What do you guys got going on this summer and the rest of the year?
Dude, quite a bit. We have a lot coming at people here this next summer. We got Chicago coming up here at the beginning of June. And then directly after that, we've got Tied Down. So we're playing the Saturday of Tied Down. And then my brother band, Gridiron, we're playing Sunday, which will be sick. So that'll be that's kind of like the unofficial record release for Outcry, which is going to be amazing. And then we've got some East Coast dates coming up here at the end of June into July. So we're doing Pittsburgh, Long Island, Philly, Richmond, and Toledo. I mean, this is probably the longest, quote unquote, I'm not even going to call it a tour, like consecutive string of shows back to back to back. I think we've done like 3 or 4 days, but doing 5 is something we haven't done, which is hilarious to say because we probably should have been doing tours, but just with work and stuff, that's never really been an option. So we're staying busy, man. We're going to try to get out the West Coast and try and go global this summer. That's kind of the goal.
Yeah, isn't that wild, like hardcore in like the modern era, like bands can't exist kind of just doing weekends. Like how do you feel about that?
I mean, personally for me, I love it because all the guys have regular 9-to-5 jobs for the most part. And so it gives us that opportunity to be like, all right, Friday night, we fly out. We're going to come back Sunday morning. Like it's definitely a grind. And sometimes I'll see people be like, oh, this isn't even a tour. Like you can hardly call this a tour. They're not hitting this place, this place, this place. And like, yeah, in a perfect world, we would love to play every city in America. It's just, hey man, I got 2 weeks of vacation. I'm trying to make the most of what we've got. I know Mikey feels the same way.
Yeah. I mean, not that it's ever about money. And that's what's great is like this band like doesn't have to make money because it's not our career. So like every time we get on stage, it's like, oh, like this is special. Like I'm so happy to be with my friends. Like we're playing this music. We're in fucking, you know, wherever, East Coast, West Coast, fucking England. And it's like, man, this is crazy. And so it keeps things fresh, I think, for us. But, you know, also like, I mean, I fucking wish that we could be full time and like, you know, afford our fucking rent and mortgages and fucking take care of our families and shit like that. But like, that's just kind of the reality is like, there's a few bands in hardcore that can pull that off. And you know, I hope someday we could be there, but like right now we're just kind of chilling with what we got.
I think we just know the reality of that and try to make the most with what we got. And for the people who say like, oh, I wish they're hitting the city. Like we do too. It's the best way that I'd put that.
Yeah. Trust me.
They can put together a show big enough to bring you out, right? They can bring you out on a Saturday.
There we go. That's, you know, email 313neg@gmail.com. You send them right over. We review everything. So nothing is out of the realm of possibility.
That's what's up. Guys, I wish you all the best for the record. It is Never Ending Game. The record is called Outcry. Came out on Triple B on May 12th. It's on all the streaming platforms. If you haven't gotten it yet, order that record. Much love and respect, guys.
Thanks for having us, brother.
Yeah, appreciate it, bro.
Introducing first, the challenger, fighting out of the hard corner. Originally from Cleveland, Ohio, he now makes Boston his home. You can plead your case, but you're going home blood red. He is here tonight for victory through harmony. It is the man known as Clevo! And his opponent, fighting out of the core corner, from parts unknown. Weight unknown. Reason he didn't pick Minor Threat in the Straight Edge Super 7, unknown. It is the reigning, defending, undisputed 185 Mile South Trivia Champion of the World, Daniel, these questions are too easy, Sant!
All right, and the first question goes to Clevo. Clevo, what is the name of the 13-song cassette Cro-Mags released the year before their debut LP, The Age of Quarrel?
Oh, okay. Jesus. I'm fucking total poser, aren't I? Isn't it The Age of Quarrel?
We're giving it to him. There's no the. It's just Age of Quarrel. And I never knew this until Ben wrote this question either, so don't feel bad. Even though you got it right, feel great.
I feel awesome.
Dan, did you know that?
In the back of my mind, I did, but I instantly, when you said that question, I like instantly went for the Before the Quarrel LP right. of the demo, you know?
Dan, don't break kayfabe, just say you knew it. Okay. All right, next question goes to Dan. Dan, why does Needle Dick Florida Governor Ron DeSantis hate the classic UK punk band The Jam?
Why does Needle Dick Ron DeSantis hate The Jam?
The clue is where they're from.
Oh, because they're from Woking?
Correct. They're from Woking, England. Point to the champ. All right. We go to Cleveland.
That's a good question.
Thank you. Ben didn't get that one. I had to pitch it again. Like, come on, man. Okay. Go to Clevo for his number two. Clevo, the Confront 7-inch was originally released on Dark Empire. The repress came out on this label named after a company who was granted a trade monopoly by the Dutch government in the waters between the Cape of Good Hope and the southern tip of Africa and the Straits of Magellan between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, with the right to conclude treaties with native princes, to build forts and maintain armed forces, and to carry on administrative functions through officials who were required to take an oath of loyalty to the Dutch government.
It's Dutch East India Trading Company.
A point to Clevo, and thank you for getting that right so I did not have to repeat the question for Dan.
I feel bad because as soon as you said it, I was just going to cut you off and answer.
Well, thank you. Let it breathe. Dan, we go to you for your number two. Dan, between 1980 and 1985, The Exploited had how many 7-inches with War or Army in the title? And this is the title of the 7-inch only, not the B-sides.
Okay. And it's only 7 inches.
Correct.
Four.
We go to Clevo for the potential steal. Clevo, between 1980 and 1985, The Exploited had how many 7-inches with War or Army in the title?
So I actually was going to say 4. So I'm going to round up and say 5.
No points this round. It is 3.
God damn it.
Exploited, Barmy Army, Army Life, and Dogs of War. And Dan, you were... If we were allowing B-sides, you would have been correct because Dead Cities is the B-side on what, Ben? The Dead Cities single has the B-side Class War.
Yeah, and the Join the Army, I thought might have, in my head, I was thinking that was a 7-inch as well, so.
Actually, if we were including B-sides, Clevo would have been correct because Dead Cities B-side is Class War and the Rival Leaders B-side is Army Style. I don't even know if I've ever heard that song. So that would bring the total to 5.
And if we were doing all the 80s, it would have been 7 because I believe there's a 12-inch in 86 or 87 that has it too.
Let's start a war.
Let's start a war, said Maggie one day.
There you go. All right, we go to Clevo for his number 3. Clevo, in 1977, Cleveland punkers The Pagans put out their debut 7-inch 6 and Change. On their following 7-inch, do they drop the word "the" from their name?
Yes.
Point to Clevo.
Yeah. I took a picture of it the other day on the wall at Amoeba and sent it to Zach.
Yeah, dude. Amoeba coming up on some punk classics, dude. That was sick.
Yeah.
Okay, Dan, number 3. Did Pennywise appear on the Cinema Beer Goggles VHS compilation or the Cinema Beer Tay VHS compilation?
Oh, God. We haven't gone this route for a while, so I'm a little bit out of practice with it. So let me think. Beer Tay has the two lovers in the pit, and Goggles has the amazing artwork of like a minion or something on it, right?
You're correct, but no points for those answers.
But do I get at least a little extra, like, you know, I think I'm getting killed tonight by Clevo. I just am not on my game.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Whoa. All right. Now I'm sacking up. Them fighting words are getting me going. I think Pennywise is on Beer Tay.
Point to the champ.
Oh, there we go.
All right, and we go to Clevo for his number 4. Clevo, this is a multiple choice question. The original version of the Final Conflict LP, Ashes to Ashes, comes with a booklet. How many pages was in the booklet? Is it A, 12, B, 16, C, 20, or D, 69?
20.
We go to Dan for the potential steal. Shit. Dan, multiple choice question here. The original version of the Final Conflict LP, Ashes to Ashes, comes with a booklet. How many pages was the booklet? Is it A, 12, B, 16, C, 20, or D, 69?
I'm going to say B, 16.
Point to the champ.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to the champ for his number 4. Dan, a multiple choice question for you, not that you need it, because you don't miss. on the LP cover of Slightly Stupid's 1998 SoCal punk classic, The Longest Barrel Ride, which crucial part of the beach is depicted? Is it A, the boardwalk, B, the lifeguard tower, C, the jetty, or D, the burrito joint?
you know this is the worst band of all time, right? Or one of them.
This LP rips.
I thought it was just a big barrel. What did you say? What are the choices?
A, the boardwalk, B, the lifeguard tower, C, the jetty, or D, the burrito joint.
Well, because they're stoners, I think. But there's a barrel, so it's got to be the jetty.
Point to the champ. The champ don't miss, people. The champ, Don Miz.
Just so you know, 185 listeners, I'm doing a double shocker right now as a celebration.
All right, Clevo, this is a before and after question, like on Wheel of Fortune. So example, the guitarist of Warzone and the band that broke Break Down the Walls is Todd Youth of Today.
Okay.
All right. This is the Departure acoustic project for a Revelation Records stalwart, previously known for Bringing It Down, and the most notable song by Deep Purple.
It's Mike Judge and Old Smoke on the Water.
Excellent. Point to Clevo.
Excellent job.
Point to Clevo. Okay, Dan, you get your own before and after. Here we go. DC band whose first LP Identity came out on Discord Records in 1984, and 90s surf rock band dedicated to science fiction themes, whose fourth LP was titled Project Infinity.
What? Can you repeat that?
Yes. DC band whose first LP Identity came out on Discord Records in 1984, and 1990s surf rock band dedicated to science fiction themes, whose fourth LP was titled Project Infinity.
I've got the second part. I'm trying to think of what the band that did. Oh, well then if I've got, all right, let's see if I can get this right. Marginal Man or Astro Man?
Point to the champ.
I love the struggle.
Oh.
Point to the champ. That was good. That was good. Remember what? Who was it? Dan had to throw really hard one time and got it. It was the most impressive moment of trivia.
I wish I remembered.
I know. So good. Okay, Clevo, we go to you. Which came first? The tragic explosion of the Challenger space shuttle or the release of the Embrace LP?
Space shuttle.
Point to Clevo. Challenger blew up in 1986 and the Embrace LP 1987. Okay, Dan, we go to you for an equally serious question. Which came first, the McGriddle and McDonald's or America's Nightmare? Which came first, the McGriddle at McDonald's or American Nightmare's debut LP background music?
AN.
Point to the champ.
Oh my God. In my head, I was thinking the McGriddle was around in the 90s and I was about to get clowned, but I used a little bit of game show thing. Well, if the Challenger was the other one, then go with the music on this one.
Well, I didn't even think like that, but good move. AN is 2001. The McGriddle is 2003. All right, everyone, let's do this. We go to referee Bedge for the subtitles. Subtotals. Shit.
The German subtitles. Dan, the reigning champion, has 6 points, and Clevo has 5 points.
Clevo, how many points do you want to risk?
Let's do all five.
Ooh, respect. And Ben, I have that tiebreaker tab there. I got it all updated in case Dan goes all in. Dan, how many points do you want to risk here?
Okay, so here's the thing. Like, do you play for the win and disappoint the 185 listeners and just, you know, also bet five and then still have that one left in the chamber? Or do you bet them all because Clevo has been trashing you? I'm going to bet them all.
So you had the choice of being the genius or the ultimate warrior, and you went ultimate warrior.
Please, please never call me that. Just call me like Bushwhacker Luke instead.
Okay, fair, fair. Okay, here we go. Clevo, this one is yours. You can listen to it as many times as you want.
Let's hear it again. one more time. Let me one more time.
Yep.
You're talking up your one more time. I can't get the second part.
It sounds kind of sick, actually. It's props to 25.
Song. Sick song.
You're talking up. You're talking up your achievements.
Incorrect. He says, you're talking out your ass. Never been committed to anything in your life. Everyone, come up front. Sing along.
Okay. What song?
I can't tell you because you get the same song, Dan.
Oh, shit. Okay.
All right. Here we go. This one is for you, Dan.
What the fuck? It like starts out as English, then goes into a blender, and then comes out as English on the other end.
English puree.
Fucking hell. Yeah, it's like Top Chef. Oh, we're serving up a Rick puree tonight. Can I hear it three more times in a row, please?
Here we go.
All right, two more times, because I think I'm really close.
Dude, Hob is so pissed. He wishes he could have gotten either one of these. Here we go.
All right, I think I've got it. I'm not joking. Now you must back up all the shit you spoke.
Yeah.
Whoa.
He did it again.
Oh, my God.
Holy shit. That
was, I'm going to say that was fucking way easier.
I can't tell because I know them all. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how to make this more fair.
I'm neutral. I can speak for this. The Dan one is easier because the one you gave to Clevo, the number of syllables doesn't line up, let alone you can't understand what he's saying. But you're talking out of your ass. He does. You can hear him say that. But then the second half of the statement, never committed to anything in your life. It's like never commit. It's like never been anything in your life. It's like there's not enough syllables. So, yeah, the Dan one was slightly easier, I think.
Slightly. So I'm off the hook.
But would you have got it, Ben?
Hell no.
Would you have got it, Clevo?
100%. I was really hoping. I like, not that I would have gotten the points, but I really wanted to just flex and be like, if you didn't get it, I wanted to jump in before they gave you the answer. I was like confident before you listened the next two times. I was like, oh shit, I got this.
See, I needed the next two just to get the back up all, because that part is garbled like fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, come up front, sing along.
Off God, the song. It's so clear once you know it, you know?
Took My Kindness for Weakness off the CD Strength Through Unity. Great record, everyone. But yeah, respect to the champ. Did it again. Mind-blowing. And Clevo, noble effort. 5 points in the body of that challenge. So
respect. I mean, Dan and I are 1-1 now, so, you know. Shit. So just don't forget, like, I took him down once.
Yeah, no, I'm undisputed according to the intro.
Yeah, I definitely take umbra. Also, since I beat Dan last time, you know, calling him the champ, I couldn't back it up though, so you know. Respect. All right.
A rematch in the fall, people. It's on.
Champions League final.
Wait, we should really have done Dan a home and home with cumulative, and I would have bet differently.
Way to go, dude.
What's up, everyone? This week on the pod, we are back and talking hardcore. Helping out, you know him, you love him. It is the best dressed man on the pod. It is Daniel Sant. What's up, Dan?
The night we met, I knew I needed you so. And if I had the chance, I'd never let you go.
Also helping out, 6'2", what you gonna do? It is the mighty, mighty Posse Chris. What's up, Chris?
What's cracking?
What is going on? Dude. You just put on your first show in the on the Central Coast there. Let us know what was up.
Yeah, it was sick. We had we got some friends, Krista and Matt, some hardcore kids. They own a children's clothing store, and we've been talking about trying to get shows, some hardcore shows up here. And they're like, why don't we just do it in the shop after hours? And so that's what we did. We had our first show. Fairly recently with Stripped, Ill Communication, No Plan, and Major Pain. And it was a success. Like, we didn't really know how it would turn out just because, we know a few people from around here, but, there aren't a ton of like established hardcore bands or like hardcore shows that happen regularly. I think the scene tends to kind of go in waves as kids come here for college and then leave. So we weren't really sure how it was going to go. And, it was perfect. You know, we got about 50 kids, paid kids out plus a band. So, nice little crowd of people packing in the room and a lot of good energy. There was like, you know, kids were moving and it was at least like, you know, four people that were circle pitting, you know, at every moment, the entire show, like these four kids were like just in a marathon, just going the whole show. And then, you know, up to like 20 kids pitting at like the peak. So it was good, man. It was perfect. And, looking forward to doing more.
Chris, can you specify for everyone, like what area of California and then also what Instagram they should follow?
Yeah. So, I live in San Luis Obispo. The shop where we're doing shows is in Arroyo Grande, which is, right by Pismo Beach, if you're not familiar. So like halfway between the Bay and LA on the coast, up in the north, 805. You can follow the Instagram handle for it is village_HC_shows. So Village Hardcore Shows. And, Dennis created that handle. So, if it's too annoying to type in, you can blame him. it's a collection of me, Dennis, and then Matt and Krista, who own the shop. And you know, we're all lovers of hardcore and you know, just trying to bring people here. So if you're in a band that's looking for a show halfway between the Bay and LA, you know, or you want to hit something up after playing Oxnard or before, hit us up.
Yeah, and Pismo Beach is like one of my favorite places in the world. So like, go make a weekend of it, you know, hit up Chris, do a show, handle business. Also, just want to say like briefly, like hardcore is maybe bigger now than it's ever been, which is sick. And like the large show side of it is awesome. But like, it's also a time when, you know, people are discovering this and there's a bunch of kids that are going to end up being lifers and end up being like the real life's blood of this scene moving forward. And it's really cool, like to see the small stuff too, right? Like, want to shout out to all the Slow Death kids putting on shows in San Diego, in National City. They're putting on shows, all sorts of different bands. And like, I don't know, the shows, they're varying from like, you know, 50 kids to 100 kids. And it's all like super young kids. It's a positive atmosphere. So I don't know, it's sick. Like, that's what it's all about, right? Like hardcore, if it didn't have like that grassroots element, like there would be no like popping off element. That's like where it all starts, you know, so. Just important to remember that and think about it and support your local scene, right? And if you don't got one, there's always got to be that spark in that match, you know? Like that Tinder, handle business. But yeah, support your local scene. That's like what it's all about. You know, support bands. Okay, let's jump into it. We want to jump into some new music that came out in the last few months. First thing that I wanted to get to was an LP that came out from a band out of Tokyo, Japan called Blow Your Brains Out. They put out an LP called Big Escape on Quality Control Records. It's up for pre-order right now, but the whole thing is out on streaming. This thing is so awesome. I've been riding my bike a lot recently, and like this is kind of one of my go-to records. I listen to a lot of like other podcasts, but when I want to put on music, when I'm not doing my homework for this podcast, like this has really just been a record I've listened to a lot. It's awesome. It fits into that lane, like the Akulu LP or like that UK band Big Cheese, kind of sitting in that lane, this like post Age of Coral, pre Best Wishes, which is a great lane. So sick. And, you know, the record's got a great recording. The drumming's great. The vocal delivery is great. There's creative songwriting. You never really know where it's going. It's not predictable, but like every time they go somewhere, it's like, hell yeah. It's just sick, dude. Lots of fast and left hand riffage, you know, just not a fast right hand, not just like a fast riff hand. Like this dude's handling business. 8 songs plus an interlude. Only 2 of them are over 2 minutes. So like, it's just a really palatable record. And we've said a bunch of times on this pod, I think the best compliment you can give like a hardcore LP in like this modern era is that you like to listen to the whole thing and like, you're not checking out halfway through. Like this is one of those. The interlude they pull off is like perfect in a way that like, it just goes nicely in the record. Plus it sits right in the middle of the record. You know, it's like acoustic guitar with like a clock or something going on. And it's just like a nice vibe. It's like a nice little minute thing to cut up the record. And then the last thing I wanted to say was that fast riff on Survive is so good. Riff of the Year contender. So overall, this and that Wreckage LP, like they're like neck and neck for my LP of the year. I love both these things. I've listened to them a ton. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that all plays out. Dan, what do you think about this one?
This thing fucking rips. Why did I sound like a goat? Rips. This thing is so good. Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail on the head with that in between AOQ and Best Wishes. But it has a little bit of like, I didn't know they were from Tokyo. I've just been ripping this record over and over and over again. And I didn't know where they're from. So it actually makes a little bit of sense because it has a little bit of that thing that goes along with like Japanese hardcore where it is like acerbic noise slightly on it, like a very trebled out, like almost machine-esque noise that is just slightly there on this. And yeah, I love the permanent error interlude. Like it's got like the clock ticking and it's got the Nothing Else Matters guitar. And then it's got this weird, like, creepy like noises, and it's just so ominous, and then it just kicks into that song Blackout. Awesome. And to echo another thing you said, this thing is amazing all the way through, but like I think my favorite song is the second to last one, Voice of the Voiceless. And how often can you say that about a modern hardcore record these days, that like a song that you would almost say is in a buried spot is your favorite one, you know? This thing really rules. The artwork is awesome, but it is so reminiscent of, maybe it's the same artist that did it, of the Big Laugh. It looks so much like Big Laugh, and then this record is called The Big Escape. So that's one thing that is just a little bit of a downgrade at all. It's really fucking awesome artwork. It just is reminiscent of something else, and or they're done by the same artist. Even the way the words are written are very similar. But I do love bricks, and you know, we love Hooded Moshes smashing through bricks, and we love the same bricks that are on the Abused being used here for the logo. Like, so good. Like this. Definitely in album of the year contention, but for me, it's not going up against Wreckage. For me, it's going up against Zulu and Gel. Those are my those are my two for now that this one is creeping in to the conversation.
Yeah, the cover looks a lot like The Abused Loud and Clear. Like a lot. You know. All right, Chris, what's your take on this?
These are the homies from Japan. Like the kids in this band, they've been around forever. Total lifers. They've been in a ton of bands over the years. Some of them are still around after, you know, playing together for years. Some of these guys are in Stand United, which is like a killer youth crew band. Anticipation, which is another awesome youth crew band. Die Birth, which is like 86 Mentality kind of stuff. Inside, all the bands that these guys have done in the past have been super killer. And this is just another in a long line of just some of the best hardcore out of Japan and out of the world, to be honest. The drummer, Yusuke, is straight up one of my favorite drummers in the world to watch. Like, he's right up there with Adam from Twist of Cain. but he's got like kind of a similar just maniacal style where he just beats the living shit out of his drums, but the entire time he has a smile on his face, and it's pretty awesome. He's got so much energy. He just, like, stands up, like, throws things, just, it's like such a sick vibe. So if you ever get to watch like Stand United or Blow Your Brains Out, like, definitely make sure you check out and watch him a little bit. But yeah, I said a lot of the things that you guys said, super New York hardcore influenced, somewhere in the realm of like Ikulu or Combust. Big Cheese is definitely a good call out. But the record is a little bit more raw sounding than those recordings. And I think Dan touched on that real well with kind of like that just Japanese grit, I guess. But yeah, this is filled with riffs, tasteful leads, banging drums. This is an awesome record. Lots of creepy crawly skank parts, some hard stomps, some blazing fast. This is just great hardcore.
It's so good. Yeah. And shout out to that band Stand United. They put out a 7-inch on 6 Feet Under in 2015. Epic 7-inch. So good.
So good.
So good. All right. Let's go on. We're going to talk The Enforcers. They put out a self-titled LP. They're out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And shout out to Canada for exporting something better than the Hart Family. Chris, let us know what's up with this.
Yeah, I really dig this. I don't typically love a ton of modern oi, which may sound weird with how much I talk about how much I love Syndrome Adrian and some of the
Freud
like projects out of there. But I think like too many modern oi bands, I feel like at least the ones that I've heard tend to be a little bit of like paint by numbers, like Combat 84, like Foreskins worship. Which isn't bad. It's just a lot of it seems to sound kind of same, but I love this. Like, this record has a ton of like rock and roll on it. But the vocals are still burly. Like, the dude's voice is shredded. He sounds like he's gargling barbed wire or something, but, so he's got this gnarly voice, but then the riffs behind it are just so bluesy. And I think they've done some previous recordings that never really hit with me. Like, I always thought it was kind of cool, but like this record, the recording is awesome. And it really is that, like, that sixth member of the band that we talk about that adds so much to the formula, you know, particularly when we're talking about like the burliness of the vocals with kind of the bluesiness of like the riffs behind it. Another thing I really like about it is the record gets better as it goes along. I think, like, if we're doing like a side A versus side B on this, like, I'm definitely taking side B because like the first half is like more rowdy. Like, it's still got, you know, bluesy riffs and stuff like that. But as far as like tempo, it's more in the rowdy boot jams, vibe. And then like the second side though, towards the end, they slow the tempo down a bit and they settle into like such a cool vibe. And the songs become less like throwing bricks at cops vibes and more like, I don't know, like cruising down the street in a topless like Chevy Nova vibes. I don't know. They, that particularly the last three songs will get stuck, really stuck in your head. I don't know. I love the whole record though. Like the front half certainly has some absolute hits, but like the back half is just like, they're the ones that I've stuck in my head all day and like wake up the next morning kind of humming them. But I think this is an excellent record. I think it's pretty firmly in my top five of the year so far, I think. Super talented dudes like playing a bunch of other great hardcore bands and different styles of bands, but like some of the dudes are in Juice, Delinquent, and some others. But yeah, I love this.
Yeah, I just saw another Canadian oi band in the last couple of weeks called the Reckless Upstarts out of Windsor, Ontario. So shout out to them. This record is like objectively really good, I think. The recording, like Chris said, is excellent. Like, this is like top notch recording, especially for the style. It just fits so perfect. And the singer has a great mean dude voice. Yeah, it's rocking. It's awesome. As far as my personal preference, this is a style that I don't love. When it comes to like street punk or oi, I like when bands lean like heavy melodic. But like, yeah, I can listen to this and be like, God, that's an objectively good band. So yeah, I think it's killer. But this kind of music, like maybe part of the reason why I don't lean to it that much too, is like, this shit makes me want to drink. And, you know, I'm sober. What, by the time this comes out almost 11 months. So yeah, this is like perfect music to, you know, drink a bunch of beer and get surly with your friends, you know? So that's not what I'm doing anymore. Dan, what's your take on this?
I really like it. I've been rocking this since it was put in my path by one Posman, Chris. I really think that we need to wheel Chris into the old folks' home, though, because side A is smashing side B. The song The Element, fucking hell. This song is so sick. We don't run, we don't hide. When trouble comes knocking, we'll meet it outside. Like, that's the first line. It's so hard. But then the chorus, we are the element. We are the element that you fear. It's so catchy. Like, that chorus is so catchy, but so hard at the same time. This thing is recorded fantastically. And as you both said, the people in this band can play. Like, they, you know, there's so many tasteful leads. There's so much bluesy rock and roll that is still upfront punk. This thing rips. And I'm with Chris also. Lots of American oi is just like, it just misses the mark because it's trying to, I don't know, cultivate something that, I don't know. No disrespect to anyone. Like, just sometimes American oi bands, it can just be a little boring, I think. This is not boring at all. This is ripping, and this is right up my alley. It's definitely up there in the contention for best records so far. I mean, we are hitting about the halfway point of the year, so that's interesting to like kind of know where we're at with what we're loving this year. But I think this thing's fantastic, and I think everyone who's listening will get something out of this because it is catchy, but it's tough, and it is really well laid out songs, like properly well written songs with pre-choruses and choruses, and that just will be resonating around your head. Like, for the, like Chris says, he wakes up singing those songs, so you can't get better than that.
Dan, you need to specify North American oi, because they're Canadian.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, exactly. I didn't mean South American. but also...
Well, Canada's not America, so you're talking about American oi.
Yeah, but when I'm saying American, I'm not meaning United States for American. I'm including the Great White North in this.
Well, let's include Ness. That's North America, too.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, and they fucking
rip too. One other thing about this, the artwork, I mean, I haven't seen the physical, but the artwork of just the razor bladed out, like razor wired out Fred Perry logo as their logo, it's cool.
It is cool. That's a cool art. For sure. For sure. Okay. Shout out the Enforcers. Moving on, let's go on and talk about a band called Bayway out of New Jersey. Just put out a tape called the Newport Sessions, and it's on streaming too, so check that out. Three songs plus an intro, and yeah, great little intro, you know? But let's get into the music, and then I'll talk to you guys about the intro. But I love that, like, the first thing I notice on this is that snare tone. It sounds so much like E-Town Concrete, Time to Shine. So that, like, just puts you in the zone of that, you know? And I don't know. It's been 25 years since that record, so it's, like, kind of nostalgic in a way. And this is, like, I don't know. It's perfect being three songs, I think, too. Like, it being so compact. They tuck a lot of stuff into, like, these three songs. For instance, World of Suffering. I love how it just goes fast to set up the mosh part, this like the verse, that first verse, because like hard parts are great, but like hard parts that come after fast parts are straight up excellent. You know what I mean? So like they get like these little things they tuck in, right? They could have easily just like started the song on that verse mosh, you know, but it's better with the fast part first, you know, even though they're not singing on the fast part really. It's so sick. The band itself, like they go back and forth kind of from like rapping to big yells like E-Town. Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, if you're a fan of Gridiron, you should give this a shot, you know, unless you want to be like a dude that only likes one band of a style, you know, which is a little sus. Stickman got a great guest spot on God Forgive Me. And then just want to say that first off, shout out Chris. I'm going to drop a timestamp here. At 1:23 on Cease to Exist, that's a 1:23 mark. That mosh part is straight up one of the best mosh riffs of the year, I think. I really like this. It's palatable. I love it as a three-song package. And yeah, Dan, what do you think about this?
Yeah, this is very successful. Like, when I heard that snare sound, like, instantly I was thinking, like, this kind of snare, like in these kind of bands, is like, oh, you know, Jimmy's cousin plays drums, and then they get this dude that has chops, and then he's with all these like thugged out dudes, and then it's just like the nerd, but he really shreds at drums. That's what I always think when I think of like bands like this. This is so like of that. You know, it's an homage and a product of its environment of being like from New Jersey and repping like that stuff. It is celebrating its like scene's hard style past and doing it so well. I really like the vocals when they are doing the like attitude-esque flow most of the time, but when it goes like very guttural, it loses me. Like when it goes like almost like death metal-y, I don't know, it loses me a bit. But I really, I mean, it's got a lot of charisma, and it gets you, especially second, third, and fourth listen, you like get into it a lot more. So everyone out there, if you're going to check this out, like if it doesn't grab you the first time, give it a couple more times, because it's a grower.
Yeah, you can't accuse this record of not having personality. That's for sure. Chris, what's your take on this?
So there's so much new modern beatdown coming out these days that I've kind of gotten to the point where I almost automatically tune it out. Unless it has some truly next level like character and personality behind it. Like I'm talking about like drenched in rabies levels of charisma and attitude, and this checks that box. Like it hits those levels of personality, and I'm super into it. I don't really know anything about this band and the people in it, but it it certainly feels like an homage to like the mid 90s New Jersey sound, which I know they're certainly citing a lot of those, because I saw an interview with their singer on Jamie Orke's podcast when they're citing Fury of Five, E-Town, Bloodline, New Jersey Bloodline, 141, and bands like that. And so it's certainly in the tradition of that. But it also draws some influence from some more, you know, like there's certainly some riffs and beats that Tsunami fans would vibe with, particularly like some of the more, Dan touched on kind of like the death metal-ish vocals on some of the parts. But this is a cool, I feel like almost like a full circle, like homage to what's going on right now, as well as like where it kind of came from. And the entire vibe of it, from like the packaging and the Newport cigarette design cover, the opening corner store skit, the New Jersey Bloodline reference of "excuse me, scumbag," the alternating between like the rapping and the death metal growls, the more high-pitched screaming vocals, it's dripping with character at every point. And there's a lot of fun lines on it too. Quote, "May I suggest you never mistake my kindness for weakness," is such a sick line. "Talking shit, your mind is weak. You better move your feet or get your fucking ass beat." just the way that he bounces on that, on those lines is so cool. And it's super catchy, like the way he hits them. And then Zach touched on the tuned up snare, like that's super like referential, and it hits that vibe so well. I'm psyched that this is coming out on Days, because, you know, like that's certainly a label that is putting out a ton of like the modern great mosh bands. And so it's cool to see, you know, I was saying before, I don't know if these are like old guys that were around when some of those 90s bands were there, or they're kind of like a little bit younger and, you know, they're bridging the gap. But like either way, I think it's super sick that people that are referencing those bands in this style, in this current era, and kind of bridging that gap. And I think it's super tight.
Yeah, Chris, I listened to that Jamie Orke podcast too. So shout out to that. Everyone check it out. The singer was on, I believe he said he's like late 30s. So I could be wrong.
Yeah. So probably like maybe just barely missed that era, or like was around for the tail end. That's cool.
Hell yeah. Everyone check this out. Oh, I would be remiss if I didn't say, Dan, what's your 2-item corner store order? And what are you asking your buddy to toss in the tape player when you get in the car?
Okay. So number one, you know, we got to go Liquid Death, rest in peach, baby. And then I'm going to get some black licorice. And then I'm going to throw Gangstar Hard to Earn in the tape player.
Yeah, let me get
Liquid Death, rest in peach, black licorice.
Appreciate you. Hey, yo, throwing that
Gangstar Hard to Earn in
respect. Chris, what's your 2-item order, and what tape are you putting in?
Well, you know, my first order is that white Monster Absolute Zero, because that is my jam. I got to get the caffeine pumping through my veins. The second order, it probably depends how I'm feeling. You know, maybe a Take 5 bar, maybe some Cool Ranch Doritos, something to snack on either way. And what am I throwing in the tape deck? Man, that's a tough question. I'm looking at my record player next to me, and I got a Seaweed record on. So I'm going to say I'm throwing in Seaweed Spanaway. With the record cover is like the lighter in the back of a muscle car. So it feels like good driving vibes.
Yeah, let me get
that white Monster Absolute Zero.
and a
take five bar.
Appreciate you. Hey, yo, throwing that
seaweed span away.
Man, in the good old days, I like a bottle of Jim Beam and a pack of the yellow American spirits. But these days, I think I'm with Dan. I'm taking a lime LD and probably a bag of ice because I like making iced tea at home now. How exciting am I? And what am I putting on in the truck? You know I'm putting on verbal. Retaliate. That's right. I'm putting on Retaliate 4. What's up?
I thought you were going to say Santana.
Oh, no, that's campfire music. That's campfire exclusives or bonfire. But no, I think that the best car record is Verbal Assault Trial. It's my favorite to go to start out a long drive after I played Don't Fear the Reaper, of course.
Yeah, let me get
a lime LD and a bag of ice.
Appreciate you. Yo, throwing that
Verbal Assault Trial. Okay, let's go on to. We're taking it out to Southport, Australia. The band Entrapment. This is the second time we're talking to them this year. They put out a new EP called The Grief Cycle. And yeah, pretty prolific. Two EPs this year already in the first half of the year. Dan, what's your take on this?
Yeah, this. It's a glow up. Like the first one was awesome, and then this one's super great. And I love that it's four songs. The songs are packed with stuff, you know. I really love the song Life is Cold the most. Like that one just absolutely stuck out to me. But I mean, the song titles are also good too. Like Someone Always Pays. That's so sick. The vocals are rad. They're like mixed great in relation to the music. The hardcore elements that they're playing is it. God, how would you describe what the core like? I'm trying to like put it in that place for the listener to like understand. It's like modern NYHC influence, but with leaning slightly towards beat down, but not going that way.
Yeah, it's an amalgamation of all different eras of New York hardcore in the 90s.
Yeah. And they pull it off so good. And, you know, Southport, Australia, shout out Southport, England, and all the Scousers who are listening, Kelly Core, and, this is really good. I can't wait to see what they would do on a full length because they're just thriving. Like they're doing really well. They're doing a style that like there's lots of other Australian bands that we've been digging lately and they're like doing a different approach. They're doing that like heavy NYHC and it's super, super rad.
Yeah, I've been a big mark for like that Melbourne stuff coming out recently, like this all on the, you know, on the Birdman or the Saints tip. But yeah, this is the other side. It's sick. I love on that song Hindsight, like it just how it busts in fast coming out of like that bounce part. And that bounce part is great because it's like got the fast right hand shit. So that's sick. Also, the song Life is Cold. I like that sleazy ass riff. It's not like this song at all, but it kind of gave me the vibe of there's that later Killing Time LP, The Method. You don't ever really hear anyone talk about it. It's not close to being their best stuff, but there was a song on it called Sidelined. There was also on a comp called Our Own Way that came out and had a bunch of good bands on it. And like, it kind of gives me like that same sleazy vibe, although the songs are different tempos, but everyone check out that Killing Time song. Maybe I'll toss it at the end of the playlist if it's on Spotify. Cause it's a good little sleaze riff. Although the Killing Time one is mid tempo and this is like a little more down tempo. Yeah, I like this a lot. I think it's better than the last one. if I was gonna do a couple suggestions, it would just be, I think that like the "you're a bitch, you're a pussy" stuff is like getting really played out. So like that just kind of like pulls me out of it sometimes. Like, you know, I seen your pictures, dude. You look like you're like knife wielding dudes. You look pretty hard. So you don't got to remind everyone. That's all I would say. I think this, I don't know, when there's too much of that, like you hear it a lot recently and it just kind of comes off like whatever. I don't know. It pulls me out of it. I don't like it.
I echo that, Zach. And one thing we didn't say is the longest bitch ever said in hardcore was on the last thing we reviewed. It goes, bitch.
I mean, if you're tucking in a song, it is what it is. But like, if you're having a dude come out to like, to say it like on the bridge parts or whatever, or on the outros, like whatever. I mean, have fun with your band, right? Like you're doing it for yourself. This is just me giving a critique, and you know, if you want us to talk your record and you request us to, like, I got to be honest with it. That's what I got. Chris, what do you think about this one?
More good hardcore from the Entrapment crew. When we talked about Temper's Flare, the last EP, I think we all liked it, but thought that like a step up in recording quality could do them some justice. You kind of had to listen to it with that discerning ear. So it's cool to see this record is certainly like a big step up there. Like you don't have to listen to it with imagination. You just like listen to it and be like, yeah, this is sick. Cool tempos, lots of speed picking. Not like crossover, but like crossover tendencies and like little flares here and there. And I like what Zach said about like an amalgamation of all New York hardcore. And I think that, you know, certainly includes a little bit of crossover. But they do like little flares that, that give it, like a taste without getting super, I don't know, like bandana or flip up hat. But yeah, the tempos, are in the straight hardcore lane, with some double bass. I like the vocals as well. Like, I think they really, they sound, Dan touched on this, but they sound awesome on this, like mixed really well. They sound super crisp, kind of sounds like Lou Kohler a bit at times, but with like a little bit of a different flow, like almost, he doesn't really rap, but like there's parts where like he comes out of a scream into like almost like a talked word or two. And that, I don't know, that variation gives it like a lot of character. So yeah, this is really cool. So, yeah, looking forward to continue to hear from the Entrapment crew and, Brisbane hardcore.
Hell yeah. Everyone check it out on the playlist. You can go to 185milesouth.com, click that playlist link at the top of the page and check out the music we're talking about, because that is what it's all about. Also, you can just look for 185 Miles South on Spotify. We do a playlist for every episode and shit. So handle business. Okay, let's go on. Last newer-ish thing we're going to talk is the band Lucy out of New York Hardcore. Excuse me. Jesus Christ, that's just embedded in my head saying that. The band Lucy out of New York City, they put out a winter promo 2023. And Dan, what's this all about?
This is awesome. This band's really cool. It's the singer from NY Hounds, New York Hounds, new band. It is like, oh God, if I was going to describe it, it's very rock and roll, but it's like, here's a description. It's power pop if the people playing this power pop have seen some shit. That's what it sounds like to me. Wow. It's like like a harder edged power pop, you know? It's got some glam in it as well. So the EP starts out with this skit, Enter Planet Dust. And, or it's not necessarily a skit, it's more like a soundscape type thing with some speaking over it. It sounds like Travis Bickle's inner thoughts in the movie Taxi Driver. Like it has that like 70s Scorsese feel to it. And then when that's over, and that, you know, it's like a minute long or something, and it's just really good. It it's not the kind of thing you're like, ugh, get on with it. I enjoyed it. Then it goes into a song called Hardly See Me. Oh my God, what a power pop masterpiece this thing is. So catchy. The ooze in there, I know you were loving them, Zach. The like backups on this song. Oh my God, so good. But the singer's voice is so gruff and tuneful at the same time, and almost like it's like a bit, you know, he's really pushing to be tuneful, so it sounds a little bit forced, but in the best possible way. Like, it's right in the pocket and like, I don't know, it just sounds so great. And then the next song, Marie, it's so like, it just follows on from Hardly See Me with like super catchy, super rock and roll, awesome leads, like really rock. But then it goes into like an almost like Ramones part where it's like, me, I'm Marie. And it's so catchy. You can imagine like if this band like really gets over, which I am absolutely sure they will, that'll be a part where they get the whole crowd to do a clap, 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 like over and over again, like really milking that part. I could totally see it. And then the last song, There You Were, Alligator Song, it's another ripper. It's a little bit long. I think the second and third songs, like including the intro being classified as a song, but Hardly See Me and Marie are the two like real standouts. But this thing is a really good record, or tape. It's actually a promo tape, but I can't wait to hear more from this band named after single cigarettes sold at corner shops. We've got that corner shop like theme running through us tonight.
Yeah, kids, don't smoke. Shit is sorry. Chris, what is your take on this?
We talked about a couple episodes about Street Sweeper and that 7-inch, and the last song on that EP is I remember Zach didn't like it, so I'm curious, or didn't not like it, but it was his least favorite song because it was a little bit too pop, I think is what he said. But so I'm curious to see what he says about this, because I think to me this follows that lane a little bit. Like I said, that last song on the Street Sweepers record remind me of Dictators a little bit, and this reminds me a lot more of the Dictators even. It's cool. I like it a lot. It's cool and catchy, and the recording's a little grimy, and I do think like maybe a little bit more of a crisp recording might make it like sit with me even more, but I really like it. It borders on like late 70s punk and like, I don't know, like a song that you might hear on as like a soundtrack to a montage on a early 80s sitcom. Like you're watching Bosom Buddies and there's a montage, or like Greatest American Heroes and there's a montage. So somewhere between like that early 80s kind of like power pop and like late 70s punk. And I hope that doesn't sound bad because I think it's awesome. But yeah, this is super cool. Like certainly file it away in that bucket of stuff to put on after you listen to Street Sweeper three times in a row. And you're like, all right, I should probably put on something else, but I don't really want to. And so like, I want a similar vibe, but something else. Like this, I think can follow that vibe pretty well, even though it doesn't, you know, it doesn't really sound like that at all, but I think it can scratch a similar itch. I dig it.
Yeah. I'm pretty similar there. With you doing the Street Sweeper call out, I thought that like, you know, yeah, it sounds kind of like if one of those legless bands, you know, like a Split System or a Street Sweeper or a Stepmother, like if they moved from Melbourne, like down to the Bayou and had like a little bit of that, like Southern grit to it. The intro on this is like really cool. It's an intro on three songs, right, Dan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Intro on three songs. So dude, shout out to this and a Bayway, huh? This intro is like, it could have been a giant miss. You know what I mean? Like, I think they really took a swing at this one, took a risk, and it could have come off like real cheesy, but I think it comes off really good. I think it was a big risk doing this as an intro. And it could have whiffed, but I think they killed it. It gives like a great vibe. And then coming into Hardly See Me, which is so good. It's a great song. I don't know really how to describe it. It is very laid back. You know, like part of me wishes like it was a little bit more rocking, but like, I guess that's why we see bands live, you know, they speed it up a bit. And also like, you know, maybe it's just my smooth brain or that I don't smoke weed anymore that I want it to like speed up. But, yeah, this is cool. That first song is my favorite, the Hardly See Me. And, yeah, interesting band. I dig it. Like, I love this, this big tent of punk and hardcore, this big, beautiful beast. I was thinking about that actually. Today I was like looking at some of the stuff I wrote about the podcast and thinking about like, you know, in the little write-ups I do on like Spotify or Apple Music or on the website, like saying like it's a hardcore punk rock podcast and like what that means to me. And like the reason why I did that was because like, it's the whole big tent, right? Like, you know, in the beginning it's like punk rock and then like, you know, the rock falls off it and then it's like hardcore punk. And then at some point, like the punk falls off the back of hardcore and it's just hardcore. And like, you know, saying hardcore punk rock, I think it like, it represents like the giant tent of which I like love the whole thing. You know, like this is like the podcast where we can talk about like how great like New Rose is and how it like changed the world. But then we can also talk about like, we love Bayway, you know, like I love that Bayway EP and I also love New Rose. Like, I don't know, like that is the big tent. And like, that's what I love about this kind of music. So super sick. Shout out Lucy. This is a great demo or promo or whatever people want to call it. But, I don't know. I want to hear more. Like, and so I think that's like the whole goal of a demo. Anyway,
absolutely. You got to answer my question though. How much do you love those oohs on Hardly See Me where he goes, "You hardly see me now."
Dude. Yeah.
You can hardly see me now.
Into like the slowed down, like fear beat. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I just knew like you would love those backups while I was, you know, as soon as I heard this, I was like, I've got to turn the boys onto this because I think they'll love it.
Yeah, I love shit like that, but only if it has a little bit of a grit to it, right? So, like,
yeah,
I did this ridiculous project recently where I listened to 500 7 inches that are pre-1984, and like a lot of it is like late 70s UK punk, and a lot of that stuff is like more pop than it is punk. And when stuff gets like too bubblegum, I don't like it. But I really love when bands have like some bubblegum sensibility while like having a grittiness to it. That's like the sweet spot. And Lucy does that really nicely.
Side A versus side B.
All right. We are doing side A versus side B for one of my favorite records of the early 2010s. It is Coke Bust. The LP Confined came out on Grave Mistake Records. Dude, this is a rager. Chris, if you pulled out like the blast beats and put in more like bounce, would this be proto dangle?
I don't think so because I don't know. Do you want me to just go into what it reminded me of?
100% go.
All right. So, if you listen to this pod, you probably can surmise that 90% of what I listen to is new hardcore. Like, I love the classics. I go back all the time to stuff that I grew up on and classics, but like probably 90% of what I'm listening to is just new hardcore, like stuff that's around. Cause I want to listen to stuff, bands that I can see next weekend, you know, and like vibe on and that's why. So I haven't actually listened to this in years. It is a classic at this point. I mean, what is it? Probably like 15 years old.
It was 10 years exactly. It's 2013. Okay.
Well, still, you know, classic enough. but, you know, I liked it when it came out. I listened to it a ton back then, but I probably haven't listened to it in, I don't know, 6 years at least. But so it's cool to go back to listen to it and have kind of a fresh perspective with, you know, I recognize the songs, but it was distant enough that I had a fresh perspective. And what really surprised me about it was how much the guitar work and even like the tone of the guitars to a degree reminded me of Carry On. Like, there's a lot of like blazing fast left hand jumping, you know, like we talk a lot about like the tremolo picking right hand, but like what I really think about when I think of Carry On is like that left hand jumping all over the fretboard, you know, the slides, you know, and this has a ton of that. And like, so if you took out the blast beats and cleaned up some of the feedback, it sounds a lot like Carry On, I thought. And then, you know, obviously this adds those elements that make it just so much more pummeling. Like you're almost adding like nails levels of pummeling, just insanity. But you know, the songs are all super short, fast and furious, hard breaks down. The drumming is insane. So that was my impression of going back and listening to it. You want me to jump into picking a side?
I think that, well, first off, I just think that call out is pretty interesting because, yeah, I think that this is kind of like the other side of the Nails coin a lot, mm-hmm. you know? So it's funny you calling out like the Jones songwriting because these two bands, like Nails and Coke Bust, like they're the bands that seamlessly go in from like that blast beat going back to double time. And it gives you like that weird feeling of like a slowdown when it's like, it's actually a raging fast double time beat. It's a very cool little thing that both of them do completely seamlessly. So I wonder if this is like, you know, if Nails, they lean more like towards death metal. Like this is if Nails like never went for like the heavy metal recording, you know, like, but songs are pretty similar. Although these don't have like the big, like mosh parts. It's more like punk mosh parts, you know, like that. But I think that's a great call out. Like, yeah, I think this is a lot of Jones in this writing.
So, picking a side is hard because I think, you know, while this is fantastic, I think like the fast parts are all like so pummeling that they tend to like, this is going to sound negative and I don't, it isn't that. So please don't take it that way. It's just like all the fast parts are rad and they're just kind of like equally there and they don't really stand out to me like from each other. And so where I think that these songs are differentiated from each other is when they get slower. So, you know, when I'm looking at the track listing, Sent in Circles, such a hard song throughout, you know, closing out Side A, I think. So, you know, when I think of that song, I'm like, ooh, I'm leaning Side A. But then you get to Side B, track two, the intro to Redline, so hard. And then the breakdown is even harder and the vocals are pissed off. Like that's one of the songs that really stands out and like from the crowd. And then, you know, next song comes in, Confined, a sick blazer with a cool, like kind of fast stomper into Nothing to Offer, which might be the coolest breakdown on this with the lyrics are just so pissed off. My life is mine. I won't give it away. I have nothing to offer, nothing to say. And then closing out Stockholm Syndrome, also such a banger. You know, particularly the part where he's, I can't think of how it goes right now, but it's like, we've got nowhere else to turn and it's hitting really well on, like those are bouncing really well on hits. So on the strength of those three, I'm going Side B. Although, I mean, both of these sides are bangers. It's almost like a coin flip, to be honest.
I love it. This is like a interesting record now in the modern era of like bands actually doing one-sided 12 inches. This record is like insane that it's two-sided. Like, this would have been a perfect record to have as a one-sided 12 inch. Like, it seems insane that you have to flip this thing.
Yeah.
Because all the songs are so short, you know? And the thing just rages all the way through. So it's sick. Like, that's why I pulled this as like a side A, side B, because I don't think I've ever listened to this thing in pieces. Like, I have the LP and I don't know if I've ever listened to it on LP. I think I've just like listened to the files. Yeah, I don't know. Side A stands out to me because the Iron Spiral in a Neutralize, it's almost like that's one song. Like, they just belong together. It's, you know, it's not like this, but you know how we talk about Blind Justice in The Last Warning, like you can't have one without the other. Like, they're just a piece. Like, I can't imagine them separating these songs in a set list. Like, that would be sacrilegious. Also, like, I think that Sent in Circles, like that mid-tempo banger, like, God, that when it goes like the last part, you know, like, so it's like a mid-tempo banger and then it goes into that blast and then it comes back to like that mid-tempo banger riff, like with a breakdown that he's singing over at the end. But when it like opens up and goes to the ride and he starts saying Refuse, that is so good. It's like probably my favorite part on the record. But side B brings the heat too. Chris called out the song Red Line. Like, that has that big, like, long riff over like the slow Youth Crew Tom part, which is like a real nice, like, I don't know, that breaks up the record real nicely. It's probably the biggest part on the record to break up from all the speed. And then coming out of that into Confined, I love on the chorus of Confined how like the Confined backups go with like the cymbal hits, like it's super quick. And I also love like that super, super short two-step breakdown part at the end. And then like, how ill is like, so this band is just all over the place with like coming in and out of tempos, like dot, 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 dot. And it's just wild that like the last song on the record, Stockholm Syndrome, like that's the one song. It's just like a 1 minute double time blazer, like straight down the pipe, no fucking tempo changes, just like in no blast beat, no tempo change, just straight fast double time the whole way through. And it's like, God, what a perfect way to end the record. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I love that. But I think that, I don't know, I was side B like almost all today. And then I went back and listened to like the first half again. And it's like, I don't know, dude, the record starts too strong with Iron Spiral into Neutralized. And then Sent in Circles probably be my favorite song on the record. I think I'm going side A. Dan, what's your take?
I love that Chris brought up the Carry On like elements that are in this, because now after that's been mentioned, I can't get it out of my head. And it's like, this band is like if Carry On wanted to be like Infest, right? You know?
Yeah, I like that.
Even
if Jones went like Power Violence instead of grindcore.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If it's like full, you know, even the artwork is very like reminiscent of Infest Slave to an extent, you know? Anyway, back to the debate. It's very simple for me. Nothing to Offer is such an incredible song on side B, but side B does not have Neutralized. Neutralized is the fucking jam. Starts out with that sleazy, like, even slower than mid-tempo. What? Give us a tempo on that. It's got the, like, it's just kind of a slither, like snaky kind of tempo. It's so good. And then it goes blazing fast. And then it goes back to that with the drums just sounding almost so classic rock. It's just, that song is so good. Like, so, so good. And then it's got an ode to me in the pit on side A too. Sent in Circles. No, I mean, I like this all the way through, and I love the fact that you can listen to an entire LP in like what, 13 minutes or something.
Pops.
Yeah. It, I mean, that is just great for anyway, they could have had it all on side A and have an etched side B. But
yeah, this cover would have been perfect for that. This is like would have been the perfect like you know, when they laser the other side.
Print.
Yeah, the screen, like screen print the other side. Yeah, it would have been perfect.
That the neutralized intro.
Yeah.
To answer Zach's question early, that's heavy dangle vibes. Dude, like that is straight, I could see.
That's the dangle beat. That's the dangle part.
Yeah.
For sure. Hey. I just picture kids and like doing somersaults in the pit, you know?
Yeah, dude. we just gotta ask the question. Coke bust. Do you dabble in dangle? Answer. Yes. Neutralized.
It's proto dangle. It's like asking like you know, the Stooges, like, oh, so like, are you the first punk band in like,
yeah,
you know, asking them that in like 73 and they're like, what the fuck? Like what is dangle? I don't know. Fuck is dangle. Get out of here, Sant.
They're like, what's the angle to your dangle?
All right. Hell yeah. Everyone, this LP rips, put a couple songs on the playlist, but you should check out the whole thing in its entirety. This is like a straight up modern classic. So, handle business.
I'm taking it back to the old school because I'm an old fool.
I'm taking it back to the old school because I'm an old fool.
Yo, what's up, motherfuckers? Old school.
Old school spotlight.
All right, we're going old school. Forgive me if I pronounce anything wrong because we're talking an OG Froy band. The band is Camera Silence out of Bordeaux, France. The record is called Reality, or however you say that in French, and it came out in 1985. Chris, this is one of your favorite records. You recommended it. Let us know what's up with this record.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to get a little bit reverent when I'm talking about this, but this actually recently disappeared from Spotify for a few months, and I was devastated. And when it popped back up, and I noticed that it was back up, that's when I hit the group chat, and I was like, We gotta talk this record, because I think this band comes up a lot when we talk about all of the French oi, you know, bands like Syndrome 81, Reek, stuff like that. But it occurs to me that, you know, some listeners may not be familiar with this, so I want to talk about them a little bit. And I actually only got into this band a few years back, so this isn't. My love for them doesn't go back as far as my love for Blitz or Coxbar, but it has surpassed probably every other oi band. This is in my top five oi bands of all time for sure, and maybe only behind Blitz and Coxbar. Before we get into the music, I think it's worth discussing the lore around this band. And I had to do a little bit of homework because I only really knew the high level facts, but so the singer, and again, forgive me if I'm butchering his name, but Giles Burton and some friends robbed a bank in 1988, and they stole an equivalent of roughly $3 million at the time, you know, in francs. So it was this crazy heist that they set up on a Brinks depot in Toulouse, France. This would make a crazy movie. They kidnapped three employees. They dressed up as policemen with uniforms that they bought at a flea market and painted blue. It's crazy. On the surface, it's pretty romantic story. You know, like when you're talking about a punk band that stole millions of dollars, and then the singer went on the run from the law and was like on the lam for 28 years. He spent 10 years in Portugal, where he owned a record store that he bought and paid for with cash from the robbery. And then after about 10 years ago, he started to get paranoid and thought the law was kind of catching up to him. So he bailed, moved to Barcelona for, 18 years, for a long time. And then, in Barcelona, he bartended at his girlfriend's family's bar. You know, before he eventually finally turned himself in, and then, crazy enough, was acquitted of all crimes. So on the surface, it's a really romantic, like punk rock story. But when you dig into the details, it's really pretty tragic. Like, you know, he left all his friends and family behind, including a son who thought he was dead. He was super sick. Before the heist, he contracted HIV from sharing needles. So while he was on the run for 28 years, he's fighting off AIDS, you know, various complications, bouts with hepatitis, lost his left eye to an infection. You know, he's getting treatments in hospitals under pseudonyms. So pretty crazy, like tragic story when you dig into it. And, you know, he finally turned himself in 2016. This is 28 years later. And so he finally got to see his son again, now 31 years old. But, you know, both of his parents had died. His son's mom had died while he's in exile. I came across a quote in an article where he says, "There is nothing romantic about what I did in hiding, unable to talk about yourself or to people from your past, including my son, constantly on the lookout in case authorities find you. And on top of that, I was seriously ill." So he turned himself in 2016 and then passed away a few years later in 2019. So super tragic story, but I think it's important for, you know, this band's history. So hopefully I didn't bring everyone down too much there, but I just thought it's such a crazy story. I mean, you think about the movie that this would make. I don't know, just like the bank heist and the tragic stuff that this guy had to deal with over the years. But let's chat about the music. This record is real quick,
Chris. Oh, yeah. I just think it's important. Like, he didn't bring it down too much because, like, at least, you know, before he passed, he got to see his son with his own eye.
Yeah.
Sacre bleu.
All right. Let's talk about the music. This record is so freaking good. It's super moody. The production makes it really stand out from really anything. I've compared Syndrome 81 to them a lot because it doesn't really sound like this, but with Syndrome 81, you listen to it closely and you're like, this is really aggressive, angry street music, but the production makes it almost feel like it isn't. And similar, this record has that kind of vibe. Like, this guitars are super clean, and aside from the leads, they're actually super low in the mix. But it actually works really well. Because they're so low, the vocal melodies really carry kind of like the tunefulness of the songs and the you know, just the catchiness of the songs, particularly when there's backups. But then the drums and the bass and the vocals are really like carrying the weight of the songs. And then occasionally, like, the leads will kind of rise up above in volume and just add such a cool vibe. Bass player, super talented. There's a lot of really cool bass lines on this, like runs that, maybe Matt Freeman might have lifted a few for Rancid. Certainly in that vibe, not like the fast, but like some of the more like laid back runs that he does up and down. Couple last things, like a lot of Oi is like soccer fight anthems. And I think Camera Silens isn't far from that, but it's almost like the music that you listen to after your team wins. You've been at the pitch all day, you're singing your fight anthems. Maybe you get in a scuffle in the parking lot, but your team won. You've been hanging out. You've sobered up. You're driving home. You're feeling glorious and victorious. And you just want to soak in those vibes as you drive home and climb into bed. And I think that this record is kind of like the soundtrack to that drive home. So if you haven't heard this and you like Syndrome 81, like I said, this doesn't really sound like that, but there's similarities in the production choices and just like the overall moody vibes that I think fans of that band would like this band, and vice versa.
This might be the record you toss on when your girlfriend leaves you for like drinking too many pints and getting in too many fights. Like, it's got a lot of sad vibe in it. This is a great record, Chris. What a great suggestion. I'd never even heard of this before you suggested it, and man, what a record. I've listened to it a handful of times. I need to track it down. There was a recent repress, I think in 2020, that's around, it's affordable. I'm gonna order it before this podcast comes out, and everyone seizes on them because there's only a couple available in the States that I see. But yeah, it sounds like a street punk band that, like, musically, like, they're kind of going post-punk. But, like, the singer convinces the band, like, we still have to have, like, parts for my friends to slam to. You know, like, think about, like, the song Reality. Like, it's so tuneful, right? Like, you're just like, God damn, this is some, like, good-ass tuneful music. But then it just goes punk out of nowhere. Like, oh, shit. Like, you know, fools still gotta, like, drink their pints and slam. So what's up? And then also, like, the biggest example of that is that I'm going to say criminal. Yes. I was going to say in English, the Criminal Class 1 and 2. Like, part 2, like, first of all, let's talk about part 1 of this Criminal Class song. This might be the best part. It might be the best saxophone part in the history of punk. And I am not pulling that out of my ass. So I alluded to it. We'll probably talk about this at some point in a future episode. But I recently listened to 500 punk 7-inches pre-1984 because I'm a fucking psychopath.
Maniac.
Yeah. And also, I'm we're working on with some of the 185 Miles South Patreons. A bunch of us are chipping in on this one spreadsheet. So if you're a Patreon and you're interested in contributing to this, let me know and I'll share the link with you. But we're tracking all the unconventional instruments in punk. And so, like, we have a spreadsheet going. There's over, like, 100 lines. And on the saxophone section, there are 16 that we have so far. I'm going to run down them real quick. The band Anti, their song Five Downtown, Channel 3, All in My Dreams, The Clash, City of the Dead, the band called The Deadbeats, they got it in all their songs, Fear in the song New York's All Right, Ignition in the song Lucky 13, Magazine in My Mind Ain't So Open, a band called the Neon Hearts. They got in all their songs. And previous to listening to this record, they probably had my favorite sax part in punk on a song called Popular Music. Everyone check that out. Peter and the Test Tube Babies. They got it on Trapper Ain't Got a Bird. Daniel's favorite sax part. The Rosillos. Yeah. 20,000 Rosillos Under the Sea. Scream has got it on Still Screaming. Severin. Speaking Oyster. Siege. One of the weirdest fucking that gets you out of nowhere when Siege has a saxophone on Grim Reaper. You're like, are you fucking serious? All right. I remember I listened to that. There's a couple funny things about this. I used to have that LP. I think I still have it, but I put it on and took a nap once, like 20 years ago. Like, who fucking puts on Siege to take a nap? What the fuck? But then, like, I came out of my nap when, like, that saxophone hit. Like, dude, what is going on? Am I hallucinating? I was on a saxophone on this record. Okay, moving on in alphabetical order. Suburban Studs got it on No Faith. The Swimming Pool Cues got it on Rat Bait. And wrapping it up, you know what's up, X-Ray Specs. They got it all over the fucking place.
That's the number one for me.
That is not the number one. The number one is Criminal Class Part 1, before it breaks punk for all the singers' homies so they can slam. I love this thing, Chris. What a great suggestion. Everyone check it out. We'll toss a few songs on the playlist. But this thing, again, like the Coke Bust, I think it's best taken in long form. Settle in and listen to it. Dan, what's your take on this?
Well, I'm angry now that Chris has been enjoying this for a few years and has not turned us on to it. Because I'd never heard of it before, and it is so good. And the Syndrome 81, you know, Chris is like pulling it back a little bit, like, oh, they don't really, you know, it is reminiscent of it, but they don't sound. I think they love this. Like, Syndrome 81 definitely has their own sound to an extent, but it is definitely leaning on this hard. The opening song, Reality, with the acoustic guitar at the beginning, just like slight subtle picking. And then it just, launches into just a awesome, like, you know, things that, you know, you've mentioned that Rancid and stuff would like look at this perhaps as something to channel because there's a very Rancid-y part without the Freeman overload. But this thing is so good. Like, The Suicide song, Est West, that song's so good. And then, yeah, Class Criminal, et deux. Très bon. I got to say, it is a little bit long, but that's not a bad thing. This is like, you're not bored. It's just, it is a longer thing in this day and age of life where we are, you know, short attention spans because of digital influences. And this is one of those like rad 80s records that, you know, you just got to strap in and enjoy it all. And the songwriting is top class. The vocals are tuneful but mournful and aggressive from time to time. And the singer creates melody so well, and also that perfect thing when we talk about great singers, they let the song breathe in the interesting parts and let the musicianship show. And this, it does it so well. I think this is fantastic, and I can't believe this is from all the way back in 1985, and I didn't have any knowledge of this till, you know, the last month that, or month, 2 months that we've been like planning to do this. And I'm really happy to have this in my life because it is a fantastic record, but I'm really bummed that I've, you know, it's almost a 40-year-old record that didn't have in my life up until recently.
It's so timely though, because all that Froy stuff is like really popping. Yep. It's sick to like get to see the roots of it. And like, yeah, you got to call out the Syndrome 81. And like, I'm a little more on side Dan here. I think that there's so much of this in that.
Yeah.
Like after hearing this, it's like, oh, this are, you know, like hardcore. What makes it great is that like modern bands stand on the shoulders of giants, right? Like there's no, what makes this music special is like the history. Everything is building blocks, you know, and there's that secret handshake. Like what's up? If you know, you know, you know? And like, I think this is just like one of those perfect examples of like a band in kind of the same lane, in kind of the same region, like just building off the building blocks of some like dudes that held it down like a long time ago. Right. Like it, I don't know. It's sick. I love this. This is great.
Especially channeling the vocal delivery to on certain Syndrome songs. After hearing this, I'm like, oh, they're really in the pocket like this guy is. Like, yeah. So, I mean, perfectly said, Zach.
Well, hell yeah. All right, Dan, final thoughts on the episode.
I mean, hardcore rules, punk rock rules, hardcore punk rock rules. And I really love consistently being wowed by new stuff coming out. And I really love being turned on to an old record that I've never heard of and is now something deep in the rotation. And, you know, I love even further when people listen to the pod and they comment about things that they have checked out and enjoyed and stuff like that. And then the conversation goes further. That's the stuff that it just, you know, to quote my main boy, Jimmy Morrison, it really lights my fire.
Hell yeah. Chris, final thoughts.
I just want to go back to something Zach touched on earlier about like all the different stuff under the umbrella. Like I'm looking at, I mean, we do this on a lot of episodes, but I'm looking at like the range, you know, with from Blow Your Brains Out to, you know, Lucy to Bayway, like to Coke Bust, like that's a pretty crazy, like, I don't know. Like if you brought in someone that didn't really understand, you know, wasn't a part of the culture and you're like, yeah, this band Lucy is under the same umbrella as Coke Bust, who's under the same umbrella as Bayway. Like maybe they would give you that, like, yeah, it just all sounds like screaming to me, but like, I think they might look at you like, really? All right. Okay. But that's sick. I think it's awesome. And I loved covering all this shit with you guys. And I'm psyched that y'all love that Camera Salens record. Cause yeah, I love it so much.
Yeah, don't beat me to it. The one that is getting sold on Discogs right now. I got it in my cart, Chris.
I copped mine as soon as I saw it drop off Spotify. I was like, oh, looks like it's time to get a hard copy.
I'm all just waiting to buy mine from Stillmatic 619.
Yeah, that'll be $700, please. I'm getting that Abby Knox one, Dan, so you can get the other one. I think that one's 21. This one's 20. Everyone, we love you all. Dan, where can the people find you?
On Instagram at Southpaw Instagrammer, in Garden Grove on July, at the end of July, at Indecision 30. Please, if you're in the house, come say hello and be up front singing along, because Zach's gonna be cool guying us in the back of the room.
No, dude, everyone pack up and sing along so I can walk on heads for the second time in my life. I'm into it. Chris, where can the people find you?
Chris Williams 51 on Instagram or Twitter. Or just see me at shows in the Nard, in Royal Grande, in Fresno, in the Bay, wherever I can make it out on a weekend.
Hell yeah. And
see you at Indecision 30 for sure.
Everyone get at me. The best way is email 185milessouth@gmail.com. I respond to everyone. Also, the socials are 185 miles south on Instagram and Twitter, and my personal Zach Retaliate on Instagram. And you know, Retaliate is the best on Instagram. Everyone, we love you all. We'll see you all on Patreon next Monday.